There we go. Good morning.
Yep, it is.
It is. It is morning once again. We are back, Hopnology. Let's see, do we want to jump right in or should we hit some housekeeping first?
Let's just do housekeeping.
Housekeeping. It's been a while since we did housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Two new patrons. Thank you, Blake Overholt, and I'm sorry, Sam Sleeger? Sledger? I don't know. We're going to call you Sam. Thank you for supporting us, as always. We appreciate it. We hope more folks come and check us out at hopnology.com/Patreon. I'm sorry, patreon.com/hopnology. I think you can get to it either way, actually. And see what we're doing with our Discord channel and all of the chat that goes on there. We get so many great ideas for the podcast from that crew. And we're coming up on 4 months since we relaunched all that. And the four-month point is when some swag is going to start to go out.
Yep.
And that's all top secret. Wait until you see what you're getting, Hopnologists. Some good stuff.
Yep.
Good stuff. What else is going on? As of 5 minutes ago, our total download volume for this podcast, you have downloaded 14,999 podcasts from us. So, really?
That's painful.
It is painful. It is painful. As I mentioned on Instagram yesterday, that's the point where you drive around the block just one more time and watch the odometer roll.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, thank you for listening. And to that one of you who was about to listen just the other day and then changed over to listen to Joe Rogan instead.
You suck.
Fucking A. Really? I mean, you could have made our morning. It's your fault.
It totally
you
is.
You know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
What else we have going on here? You think it might be Mark. I don't know. Nah, Mark listens the moment they come out.
Yeah.
What else is going on? So we finally took the plunge into merchandising.
Merchandising!
And if you go to teepublic.com, that's teepublic.com/user/hopnology. I don't know why user. We have a whole bunch of designs. We've got the educated hop cone up there and a cool little hop cone wearing headphones for the podcast. And you can get t-shirts and sweatshirts and phone cases, and if you really want one, you can get a banner.
A banner?
Or a throw pillow. You need a throw pillow for the monkey room.
I do. That's a good idea.
So all that, and they just launched, believe it or not, masks.
Oh, nice.
You can get a Hopnology mask, which, you know, not medical grade, but if you're working out in the field and need to, you know, cover your mouth and your nose, There are worse ways you can go than a Hopnology mask.
True.
I would not get the design on the mask of all the quotes from the show because someone's going to have to come close enough to you to read that the whole social distancing thing is just thrown out of the water at that point. So that's probably the wrong design for the mask, I'm going to say. But take a look. It's fun stuff. And we had a fun time putting it all together. And, you know, I think you and I need to get all decorated out and get some pictures of ourselves wearing all of our Hopnology gear.
Those guys.
So let's see. Last thing here, we had our brewer webinar last week. So thank you to the brewers who attended and spent some time with us going over brewery-related topics on the science and on the market side. And we are in the process of getting all that edited and whittled down a bit. And we're going to throw it out there on the internet in some capacity. It'll probably go on YouTube. Still working that out. By the time you hear this recording, it will most likely be up there and you'll have seen announcements about it on Instagram and Skywriting and whatever other avenue I choose to get it out there. I'm thinking smoke signals are making a comeback.
Carrier pigeon.
Ooh, there we go.
Nice.
They're you know, they got nothing better to do, those carrier pigeons.
Correct.
Let's set them loose.
That's right.
So that webinar will be out there by the time you listen to this, I hope. And give it a shot and share it with your other brewer friends. And let's see if we can get some feedback and some interest in more information like that going forward. And that is all the housekeeping I've got today.
Wow, that was a lot. We've been storing it up maybe.
We have been. We have been. It's been pent up demand on the housekeeping front, but there we are. There better be more housekeeping next time we record when we're over 15,000 listeners, unless everyone takes this as a personal affront and no one downloads for the next week, which would be really freaking funny.
Hope it doesn't go backwards. Can people undo their listens?
I don't think, and back to the odometer joke, we just sat down with the kids to watch Ferris Bueller when they try to run the odometer backwards. So I put the car in reverse.
One of the best
parts
logic
of the movie. Yeah, I don't think it works that way. You can't go backwards. Can you? I don't know. Let's ask for people to try. Can you re-upload your podcast and have it reverse our numbers? I don't think it works that way. So let's see. I think we're talking today about roots, right?
We are. By special request of Suzanne, we're talking about roots today. Root growth, healthy root growth, and all sorts of stuff that goes on beneath the soil that we often take for granted. And believe me, there is a ton of stuff going on down there.
But don't they want it to stay private? They've got, they're trying to keep it covered up. That's the behind the curtains things
that
we don't really need to be looking at. It's a little embarrassing.
Well, and all puns aside, root physiology in plants is really complicated. And you'd think, well, they're roots, right? It's just a root. What do roots do? Well, they soak up nutrients and water and anchor the plant in the soil. Well, yes, but just like, that's like calling the top part, the aerial part of a plant, shoots and not leaves and branches and fruit and all sorts of other stuff like that. There are physiological and morphological differentiations under the soil, and they do different things. And I think it's just good for people to understand what those things are, what they do, and what is good and what's not so good, specifically as it pertains to hops. It seems like everything in hops, the research is really spotty on root growth for hops. So I've done my best to compile all of the most credible research to share with folks and give them a potentially not definitive, but certainly help clear up some misconceptions or highlight some things they should be taking a look at more closely.
Very nice.
How about that?
It sounds good to me. I have no idea what goes on down there, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
I bet you are. as you leaf through your pamphlet of 20 ways to stay awake during a podcast, is that what you're
talking? 20 ways to stay, yes, 20 ways to stay awake during a podcast. Right after I finish this level of Candy Crush.
Oh, right. Exactly. Can you hear me leafing through my book here? I don't know if you can hear that or not, but
I do. Yeah, yeah. You actually pulled out the paperwork this time.
I did, my textbooks, because I, believe it or not, I'm not a root specialist. And yes, there are root specialists.
We would have brought one of them on the show, but I fell asleep actually trying to email several of them. I couldn't get through it.
It's no better than Ambien. Okay. As we all know, hops are herbaceous perennials, right? Which means that they die back to the ground. All the aerial portions die back to the ground every year. Now, some of you in more tropical, subtropical zones are like, mine don't. I'm like, I know. Just in traditional temperate zone horticulture, that's what an herbaceous perennial does. If the top part dies back to the ground, we obviously have to regrow all that every year, as we all know, as North America is getting ready to hopefully start training soon. Well, those buds originate from somewhere, and they originate from underground sources, so they're originating from the rootstock. Entirety of the rootstock, all these different physiological components, they influence shoot growth probably more so than any other aspect of the plant's physiology. If you start looking at these things and really start taking a look at the different types of organs, plant organs, in the rootstock, it gets really, really interesting because of the different functions that they serve. So I thought before we get into sort of, how to promote good root health and nutrient uptake and all that, we need to talk about anatomy of a hop rootstock. Let's start at the soil surface, right at the soil-air interface. When you have a plant that's a couple of years old, you start to get that gnarled sort of woody stump, right? Or we call it the crown. That sits right at the soil surface or slightly below the soil surface, right? And oftentimes you'll see just gobs of little buds that are dotting that crown that are above the soil throughout the dormancy period. And usually they're not viable. They don't grow shoots for the following year. But that interface right there, they call those stumps. Really creative word, right? Mm-hmm. All those old dead, what were new wood or shoots that the above ground portion is going to grow from. Those form every year as new wood. So the crown itself, that's, let's say, the actual node of the crown, it's like about the size of a racquetball in a mature plant. So that's sort of like this glob of woody cells that can differentiate into all sorts of different types of structures. And as a plant grows up, it's sending up what's called new wood, sort of like new woody shoots that have some buds on them that can break and form the aerial portion. Unfortunately, those may not be the ones that we want. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind of these shoots that woody shoots that can grow up from the crown and form buds. So that's growing vertical from that glob of woody tissue. And then you've got the opposite direction, right? Pretty much straight down or slightly to the side. Those are what we call anchor roots or skeletal roots. And just like you would find in any kind of tree or shrub or whatever, you know, you dig one of those suckers up. You got those big fat roots that are going straight down or definitely going mostly downwards. They tend to get thickened. They tend to be very woody. And those are, those vertical roots are oftentimes called skeletal roots. They're anchors. That's what they're doing. They're holding the plant in the soil so it's not easily removed. They don't do a whole lot. They don't take up a lot of nutrients. They don't have a lot of root hairs. Even if you dig one up, like if you're renovating a field and you're going through and you're plowing up some crowns, you look at them and there's very little side branching. There's very little fuzzies on them, root hairs. They don't do a whole whopping lot. What they have going for them is they've got this like bark on them. And that bark has these tiny little sort of horizontal slashes in it. Those are called lenticels. And those lenticels are there to exchange gas. So it takes in oxygen, gives off CO2. And one of the ways that hot plants die in the field, certainly under conditions where you've got a lot of water or saturated soils for a long period of time, is they suffocate because they can't exchange those gases from respiration in the roots. So,
and is that suffocation, is that soil too densely packed?
It could be, but not usually. Usually it's due to the fact that that the soil's waterlogged, like in Nebraska last year when we had all of that heavy flooding and the soil was totally saturated for months on end and you get a lot of death. That death is usually coming from the plant not being able to exchange gases and suffocating. And, well, it's like you trying to breathe underwater, and it works so good. And then you got other stuff that moves in, like fungus and things, once the plant starts to decompose after it's dead already. So that's what those vertical roots do. The really interesting stuff happens coming out of that crown node, the stuff that grows horizontal and slightly down, like not quite, you know, these there's no absolutes here, right? When I say vertical or horizontal, but you get the idea, the sure. General directions, right?
Yep. Oh, sure.
That's where the interesting stuff really happens. And you've got really two groups of sort of roots structures that shoot out horizontally from the sides. So you've got suckers, as they're often called, which are underground. Frankly, they're underground stems, and botanically they're called stolons. But they're shooting out to the sides, and they're new wood. Every year they grow new again, and they're just riddled with buds, all over these things. And then you've also got some of this new wood. We talked about new wood growing up from the crown. Mm-hmm. There's also new wood that can grow from the sides. And these are usually much thicker. These underground stems, these suckers, can turn into new wood year over year. But the here's the key thing. These are where the majority of our shoot buds come from, is these two types of horizontal roots, the suckers and the new wood. Here's a key factor that's really a hot topic right now, this whole concept of, quote, bull shoots, which I call bullshits. The idea that certain shoots that come up are somehow physiologically different than other shoots from the root structure and therefore should be removed because of their nature. Sort of, but not really. What we know is that there seems to be some sort of correlation between the shoots that are developing from these sucker buds that are really young, like a year or less old, and the shoots that are coming up from these buds that are on new wood that could be between, you know, 2 and 4 years old. As that new wood gets older and older and older, it doesn't die back every year, the buds can stay viable for up to 5 seasons. And then after 5 seasons, that new growth wood, the horizontal root, gets so thick that it just sort of swallows the bud and the bud never pokes out. These are rhizomes. This is what we call rhizomes. And there seems to be some indication that these, quote, bull shoots that people see, these really rapid, vegetatively overactive shoots, are coming from these sucker roots that are shooting up. And the, I'm going to say docile and advantageous shoots that people seem to be training are coming from these buds that are on the new wood or the older rhizomes. It is total conjecture right now because there's been no research to prove this. However, based on early research, and I'm talking like back in the 20s, and that's 1920s.
Yeah, I was going to say it sort of is the 20s.
Yeah. Okay. Like 1924, to be exact, indicated that this might be the case. However, that's where the research stopped. There's nothing after that. And it was really only an indication. However, I can see from a physiology standpoint that might be something that's going on.
That logically flows in the sense that a stronger shoot is going to be able to push through all of that heavy wood, and you'd think if it makes it through in those 5 years, it may have more vigor to it.
Well, so yeah, but what the research is saying is that those sucker buds are the ones that are the creators. That's where the origin of the bull shoot is coming from, not from the new wood. So it's the other way around.
I'm a personal believer in the aged wisdom of something that's got experience like that than the young upstart.
Oh, is that
yeah,
that's what you're going with.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to separate these two. Correct me if that's a completely inappropriate analogy.
Analogize it as you want, but yeah, the older buds on the older, quote, new wood, because all of these terms make like zero sense. There is an indication that those buds are the ones that are associated with, quote, the right binds to train, as opposed to the sucker buds are the ones associated with the, quote, bull shoots that you don't want. Total conjecture. I could find nothing else in the research that even mentioned this paper. So take it as you will. But I thought I would share it because there's going to be at least one of you out there that says, well, back in 24, Burns and Blake said that, yeah. Okay, I get you. We don't know. It's one paper. Get over it. The interesting thing here is that those, for hop growers, for propagation, those fat rhizomes that you get that you're all like, oh, man, those are awesome. Look how fat they are. And they've got buds. And I'm really happy, as opposed to those really skinny ones like the size of a pencil that still have buds all over them. You're like, oh, that one's not very vigorous. It's not going to grow. Not true. Not true at all. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of difference in the vigor of those rhizomes that get cut, whether they're from a big fat hunk of wood or whether they're from a thin sucker. there's nothing to support that, certainly in the research. The buds seem to be the vigorous part. And those horizontal buds, they can form into shoots, they can form into roots, they can do whatever they need to based on what the plant wants. The idea that, oh, I got this spindly little rhizome, it's not going to do anything, not really true. Sort of the thickness or the mass of the root cutting that you get for transplanting does not equate to vigor or survivability, so to speak. Because the starch isn't stored there. The starch is not stored in that woody rhizome part. There's a whole other starch organ, literally called tubers, that most people never see in a hop roots. So they're not really stored in the rhizome.
You know, when we talk about everything going on down there, I know that's something that we've talked about for years. The general guidance is when you're planting in mounds to do 3 rhizomes.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking here about the individual rhizome and what's going on there, but is there a possibility of getting too much going on at once and interfering with each other and stealing from each other in terms of nutrients and whatnot?
Absolutely. I mean, the more plants you put in one spot, the more they're going to compete with each other. The old wisdom of, and I don't want to go down the route of planting and rhizome management, but you know, people say, oh, you got to put 2 or 3 in that hole. Well, that's because you had so many rhizomes from all of your root pruning that you heaped them up and burned them, right? So why not put more than one in there just to ensure your, quote, success of establishment? We never, in all the fields that we propagated by rhizomes, we never put more than one rhizome in a location. Mostly because they cost us money.
Yeah, that's true.
As Dan says, I'm a cheap bastard. Yeah, we lost a few hills here and there, but I mean, I'm not crying over it compared to the money that I saved in not buying multiple rhizomes to stick in one hole. Mm-hmm. When it came down to cutting rhizomes, sure, then I put more than one in. You know, I'd put maybe 2 in there because you had them. I mean, why not put it in the ground instead of burning it or chucking it in the compost pile? But there is a point of diminishing returns where they will compete with one another for nutrients. Correct.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I wanted to dig into that aspect of these horizontal young suckers versus the new wood.
You've been saving the dig in.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll find that very sound nice effect, the rim shot. Okay. Now what are we going to talk about? Let's talk about, I mentioned just briefly, the root tuber. Yes, root systems produce root tubers. And by tubers, I mean potatoes, right? That is a tuber. It's a starch storage organ, and they form as part of the skeletal root system. A skeletal root will look like a long, floppy carrot, basically. They're not very rigid, but they're very smooth and tapered, whereas the tuber-type root is very, you know, lumpy. And it doesn't form like actual potatoes. It forms like swollen sections on roots, and it can be very asymmetrical, but that's where the starch is stored for the plant to use, both during dormancy, although very little, but certainly for its first flush in the year, it's hydrolyzing all those starches for sugar energy to help push the new buds through the soil. But that rhizome itself, looking at the data here, the actual starch content of the rhizome that you're planting is really low. So it's paramount that whatever energy that rhizome has to push that shoot through the soil so that it can get leaves out and start producing energy to start sending out its own new root system. As opposed to what some seeds do, which is the exact opposite. First, when a seed germinates, it will put its root radical down and start forming its root system, and then break open and start sending up what we call the hypocotyl, which is the very first stem structures, shoot structures that's coming up. So it's sort of the opposite. So the idea, think about how that plays into your planting management when you're putting in rhizomes, and we can talk about that here in a little bit when we talk about nutrient uptake. That pretty much covers the actual structure. So we've got those vertical roots that are, we call the skeletal roots, and that holds the plant in the ground. We talked about the tubers. which is your starch storage organ, right? And then we've got these couple of types of horizontal roots, the suckers, which are the fast-growing horizontal roots that are often referred to as stolons. Although I have a problem with that as a plant scientist because it's a nomenclature thing. Sorry. Anyway, we have our new wood, which is the more thickened. They could have been suckers, maybe not. They can be horizontal, they can be vertical. And oftentimes with that new wood, if they're slightly vertical, more vertical than they are horizontal, they'll turn into shoots and rhizomes. If they're more, you know, pointing upwards, if they're more horizontal, then they're likely to turn into roots. But I say likely because, it's all underground. We're not exactly sure what's going on down there. And then we got our giant mass of woody crown that sort of the King's Cross station of the intersection between the underground world and the above ground world. That's why crown rot is so devastating. Once you get some of those rot fungi starting to infect the actual crown and sort of disrupt the intersection between the root anatomy and the shoot anatomy, the whole plant just dies. There. So now you're all root anatomists. Congratulations.
I have this Escher-like picture in my brain right now. Everything that's going on down there.
And I'll just say as an aside, a lot of this data that I'm getting is from a textbook called Hop Production by Vaclav Rybasek, Czech, of course. It's called Developments of Crop Science 16, Hop Production. And it was last edited in 1991, so it's a bit out of date, but it's not like 1956, like most all the other papers and stuff are. Extremely detailed book on hop physiology. And there's some in here about, you know, production and whatnot, but it's a really, really great book. This is a textbook. It's not like an intro to hop production or, you know, a production manual. This is a hardcore textbook. I know a lot of growers who have gotten it because there's very little in the market right now for good hop manuals. And they try to read it cover to cover. And they're just like you, Greg. It's like, it will put you to sleep. I'm reading this. And even as a plant scientist and a physiologist, I'm reading this. And I'm like, wow, this is dense.
And what is his name again?
Right. His last name or his whole name?
His whole name.
Vaclav Rybasek.
Vaclav, love, oh my God, Ryb, Losek. I need to use that in the limerick this week.
Oh, on Facebook, okay, so yeah. Vaclav. That's his first name, and the first A has a accent over it, and then his last name is Rybasek.
Wow, yeah, I spelled it completely wrong the first time, but both the correct and incorrect spellings still get lots of red squiggly lines under them in OneNote.
I'm sure they do, because it is in Czech, and he's no longer with us. He passed away a few years ago, but I would say in terms of hop, like just plant physiology, he's probably one of the premier researchers, and the data and the research that he did is quite extensive. But again, this thing is a textbook, and unless you are just don't go out and get it because you're like, oh, this is the tome on hop growing. It is not. It is a plant physiology textbook. So just a disclaimer there.
And if you can hit us back with whatever will rhyme properly with Rybasek for my you know, I'm thinking hops growing up the deck will work.
You'll figure it out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay. So that's the structure, and I had to have that open in case I wanted to get into. There's all sorts of charts and tables in there about each one of those different types of root structures. What is their nitrogen content versus their mineral content and their starch, and what is the biomass percentage? And just, he did an enormous amount of research over his 50 or 60 years. And then the same thing goes for all the shoot production and hop cone physiology and burr stages and all kinds of stuff. So, okay. So there's your anatomy lesson, but Greg, what are roots do? What are they there for?
They're there to gather nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Gather nutrients, spit out waste.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all I know about roots.
Water? How about water?
Well, I consider that in the nutrient family, but yeah, it's...
You are not the only one.
Okay.
You are not
the
only one.
Did I walk into something there?
You did. A point of contention. Let's talk about healthy root growth, how roots grow, and nutrient water uptake.
They're mostly there to prevent me from pulling things out of the ground in an easy manner when I'm cleaning.
That is true. And getting in the way of your shovel constantly. Yep, they do that well. The root system in general, that is all correct. They take up water. They take up nutrients. They exchange gases and wastes. They anchor the plant. And in some cases, there is a symbiotic relationship with fungi in the soil, mycorrhizal fungi. But what parts of that rootstock anatomy does what function, still in this day and age, is a contentious subject because we just don't know to a high degree of confidence. And you say, how can that be? How can we not know? Like, we know more about Mars than we do in most cases about plant physiology because it's not sexy. So let's talk about what we do know, and then we'll talk about what the contentions are. In general, as a root grows, I think a few weeks back we talked about how hot plants, how the shoots grow, and we had this, you know, I think I described it as like this, I called it an apical dome. It was like a tip of a rounded eraser, and there's just a few cells in there that are dividing, and then everything else elongates to sort of... increase in length. It's not really cells dividing. Well, the roots grow in a similar fashion. They've got the only thing that's actually growing is the very, very, very tip. That's the only place that cell division is taking place. Everything else then is elongating, just like the shoots. At the very, very tip is something of a root, is what we call a root cap. And it's a bunch of cells. It's like a shield. Because you can imagine growing through the soil is kind of abrasive, and it would otherwise destroy the tip where all those cells are being divided, right?
Sure.
So there's like this cap over the end of it, this root cap. And sometimes that root, I don't know if you've ever seen this, certainly for those of you who are corn farmers, you'll see prop roots. These are the roots that come off the stem that are above the ground and sort of head down towards the soil. A lot of times they're dripping in goo. It's called mucilage. And it's like a lubricant. It's like a soil lubricant in order to help get that root to penetrate through the soil column. It also helps serve to uptake nutrients. But at the very tip, this thing's covered in goo. And then shortly behind that, you've got that, what we call the meristematic region, or the meristem zone. That's where all the cell division's taking place. It's, again, very compressed. But then for a long way beyond that, I would say, of the total growing tip, the elongation zone is probably 80% of that growing tip of the root. And then you get into where the root hairs start being produced. This would be on a root that is... taking up soil water solution. I didn't say nutrients, I said soil water solution. So those root hairs that start growing back a good ways from the growing tip, they have a huge amount of surface area, as you can imagine. So those big anchor roots we talked about, I mean, those suckers can be up to an inch in diameter. There's not a lot of surface area there compared to its volume. But then you look at all those tiny little root hairs that are all over the place, and even when you're digging in the soil and you're breaking those things and you're trying to pull a plant out of the ground, that's really what's giving you the good anchoring. And there's a huge amount of surface area, orders of magnitude more surface area on all those b- bajillions of root hairs than there are in those giant anchor roots. And the name of the game for nutrient uptake in hot plants or on any plant is surface area, root surface area. The root hairs provide that function. The root hairs are where all of the action is regarding soil solution uptake. Here's the contentious part. Not all plants, you know, species, not all species take up nutrients in the same fashion. There's some debate now it's been going on for decades, but again, because nobody's been researching this because there's no freaking money for it and it's not sexy. That I talked about that elongation zone where there's no root hairs just before the root hairs form. That's actually a primary region of nutrient uptake, and the root hairs are primarily focused on water uptake. That would suggest that if you want optimum nutrient uptake, that you need to be forming as many new roots as possible so that you have those multiple elongation zones. Don't know what to think about that. Because the root hairs traditionally are there to take in nutrients, soil solution. If you're taking in water, you're taking in nutrients. The thing that is interesting about that concept, there's this thing in a root, right? You don't want just anybody or anything getting in through your roots, right? It's not just like an open welcome door for critters, you know, fungi, bacteria, all sorts of stuff to actually get in the plant. So there's this thing called the Casparian strip, and it's like a membrane on the inside of the root, and nutrients, water can diffuse across it, no problem. So it's slightly porous, big enough for water molecules just to diffuse across it, but nutrients cannot get across it. They need to be actively transported. So there's little portholes in this Casparian strip that will allow certain molecules to cross. For instance, you know, there's going to be one for nitrate, and there's going to be one for maybe some ammonium, and one for calcium, and one for magnesium. And some of these ports will allow multiple different types of ions, nutrients, through it. Some of these ports will preferentially allow, let's say, calcium through compared to magnesium. They'll both fit through there, but it likes more calcium than does magnesium for whatever reason. So that Casparian strip is present and is fully developed in the root hair zone. Mm-hmm. It's not developed barely at all in that elongation zone. So what that would mean is if there's active uptake going on in that elongation zone for nutrients, that it would be game on for all sorts of other stuff to be able to get into the plant. I don't buy it. I don't see it. I mean, that would, at what point then is the use of the Casparian strip?
Right. Why have a filter in one area and just a free for all in the other? It would make the filter unnecessary over time.
Yep. I agree. And so that's why I don't subscribe to this idea that the elongation zone is actually responsible for taking up nutrients. So I'm going to stick with the root hairs. So the root hairs is where the action is. The more these root hairs you have, the more nutrient uptake you have, the more water uptake you have, and the better management and balance that you have of those things. So the name of the game for healthy root development is root hairs. And what breeds, so to speak, what helps to create a favorable environment for root hairs is good soil aeration. So not heavy compaction, good soil drainage, and what we would consider to be a healthy soil. So soil that is microbiologically active, because you've got all these other microbes in there and fungi, healthy fungi, that are creating environments that are nutrient dense. And the root hairs are going to thrive and survive there quite well. Also leads to this idea of root pruning, where in a mature plant, you go through and you cut back the roots, literally with a shank or a blade that goes in the ground, and you can help sort of force those roots to branch. If they branch, then they're going to have the potential to double their root hair capacity. which also helps their plant uptake, plant nutrient uptake. That's a whole nother podcast, and we're running long as it is. So, that's your primer on hop roots, Suzanne. Congratulations.
Wow. And you said it twice. Root hair is where the action is.
Root hair is where the name of this one. You bet. Mm-hmm.
There is a lot going on in there. I need, what I need from you is a drawing of this, preferably crayon, if possible.
I can, because
that's how
I can,
I'm picturing it.
I can get you a drawing, but not a drawing.
Not a drawing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how I said it? Drawing?
You did.
Yeah, a little bit of that draw there.
Mm-hmm.
I need a picture.
A picture?
A picture. You got one of those big 64 packs of crayons with the sharpener on the back?
I do, yes.
Okay, that's what I need.
Can do.
Lots of browns and greens in this one. I have no idea what goes on down there.